Hey, Chris Garlock here with a special Labor Day Labor History Today podcast extra.
They broke your nose up in Canada in 1911. They caved in two of your ribs in San Francisco in 1912. But the union was growing. From 23,000 to 43,000 to 61,000 to 75,000. Yes, the machinist union was growing.
That's from Boomer Jones, a union radio show that first aired in 1950 and was re-aired last night on WCPT in Chicago. Boomer Jones was produced by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, or IAM. It aired coast to coast on the Mutual Network on September 3, 1950, the day before Labor Day. The show was the first radio program of its kind ever attempted by a union, and told the story of the old-time boomers, as IAM union organizers were called, who helped build one of the largest industrial trade unions in American history. Major roles on the show were played by three of the top Hollywood stars of the time, William Holden, Marie McDonald, and Brian Donlevy, who all donated their time and talent. For the rebroadcast, the IAM's Tanya Hutchins interviewed retiree Charlie McAuliffe, who brings both a historic and modern-day perspective to this 70-year-old show. Here's Boomer Jones.
Who makes my heart beat with pride, with a joy I can't hide, as they work side by side. Labor, who never fails to come through, for the red, white, and blue, with the work they can do. Labor.
Welcome to the Boomer Jones 70th Anniversary Labor Day Special. I'm Tanya Hutchins with the Machinists Union, also known as the IAM. The full name of our labor union is the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, which began as a railroad union, but has grown to be one of the largest diverse unions in North America. We are one day from Labor Day, which is tomorrow, September 7th, traditionally the first Monday in September. Did you know that a machinist named Matthew McGuire came up with the idea for Labor Day? Joining me is retired director of the IAM Retirees, Community Service, and EAP departments, Charlie McAuliffe. Welcome, Charlie.
Hi, Tanya. It's good to be with you.
So, Charlie, tell us, how long have you been retired?
Well, I retired in December of 2013, so almost, you know, 6.5 years or so.
And how long have you been a member of the IAM?
I was a member for a little bit over 25 years. I maintained my membership after I retired, too. So I guess it's over 30 years now.
So, Charlie, how do you feel about Matthew McGuire founding Labor Day and the controversy around that?
Yeah, this was a surprise that started to come clearer to us in about 2000, in the year 2000. Matthew McGuire was the secretary of the New York Central Labor Union in New York City, of course. And he was a machinist. Well, he was the one that proposed the idea of a Labor Day parade. And there's a connection between those Labor Day parades and the Knights of Labor, which was an earlier organization. So he, as a machinist, he proposed this, and they had the first Labor Day in 1882 in New York City. But Peter McGuire, who was the head of the Carpenters Union, was given credit. Obviously, there was a confusion about the last names, but also Peter McGuire was a very close friend of Samuel Gompers, and Gompers promoted the idea that Peter McGuire was actually the guy that created the first Labor Day, but it was really Matthew McGuire, a machinist. Now, if you notice that 1882 is before the existence of the Machinists Union. Well, there were many different independent kind of machinist organizations, usually connected to the Knights of Labor. It was a Knights of Labor first president, he was the president of the Blacksmith Machinist Union in 1869 when it was created. So machinists have been organized in some way or fashion before 1888 when we came into existence. That also explains why maybe Gompers did not like using a machinist as the person who created the first Labor Day, because he didn't like the Knights of Labor, and the machinists were often associated with the Knights of Labor.
Now, Charlie, we're here to introduce the world to Boomer Jones, which was a radio show in 1950. But first, help us explain what a boomer was back then.
Yeah, well, the term boomer often referred to a worker that moved from one city to another to look for better wages and better working conditions and hours. Boom towns, towns that were just being created and had a lot of activity, usually had a shortage of labor. So people who went to those towns to work in a particular craft were often referred to as boomers. Boomers happen to also carry the word of the union with them because they often were highly skilled craft workers that came from union shops where they were taught through an apprenticeship program. So they were naturals for organizers. And throughout the IM history, we have a lot of instances of boomers organizing in Mexico, in Panama, in many places that we wouldn't normally associate with our membership.
How did the show Boomer Jones come about?
Well, International President Hayes was one of the three, in my estimation, progressive international presidents of the Union. And he was very interested in trying to enter the new media of radio and TV that was all kinds of programs were being played on them. And he wanted to promote the union and give recognition to the union and take it out to the general public. So this show came about through his instigation.
Now, there are Hollywood stars in this show, William Holden, Marie McDonald, and Brian Dunleavy. How big of a deal was that back then in 1950?
Oh, that was a big deal. These three people were on the cinema all the time, and just amazing. A young William Holden, most people will remember William Holden and movies like Stalag 17 or Bridge Over the River Kwai, many different movies he was in. It's amazing. Also, the director of the movie, most people won't know who this person is, but Mel Ferrer, he was a famous name in Hollywood as well.
Well, let's set up the show, which we're going to break up into two parts. It starts out in 1904 when Theodore Roosevelt was president. Eddie Jones learns how to become a machinist through an apprenticeship. Now, this is before he became a boomer. Here is the first half of the original 1950 radio show, Boomer Jones.
Boomer Jones. Presenting Brian Dunleavy as the narrator, William Holden as Eddie, and Marie McDonald as Maggie in Boomer Jones. Directed by Mel Ferrer. Written by Morton Wishengrad, with music by David Raxon. Brought to you by the International Association of Machinists.
So you want to be an apprentice?
Yes, sir.
Term of indenture is 4 years.
Well, that's all right with me.
10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
I'm willing, sir.
For the first 3 months, your pay is nothing. Zero. After that, it's 5 cents an hour.
Yes, sir.
Now, pay attention. This is an engine lathe. That one's a turret lathe. There's a planer, and there, that's a shaper. And this machine in my hand is a broom. take a good firm hold and sweep the floor.
Your name was Eddie Jones. It was 1904, and for the next 4 years of your life, the lathe became the altar before which you worshipped. Manuals on mathematics and metallurgy became your prayer books. And for 10 hours each day, 6 days each week, you trained yourself to set up a job and to complete a job. To take cold steel, shapeless, unformed, raw, and to machine it within a thousandth of an inch, transforming the dead metal into something live.
Not bad, Eddie. It's not bad at all.
It made you feel good. You could handle any tool in the shop now, any machine.
Yeah, that's nice work, Eddie.
You weren't an apprentice anymore. You were a journeyman now. As a matter of fact, in the next election, you'd be voting for the President of the United States. Even Mr. Vesey, the boss, was aware of it, because in your pay envelope, there was a little slip of paper. Old McDaniels at the next lathe had one, too.
My reading glasses are all smudged. What does it say, Eddie?
It says to all employees, the management has no desire to influence the votes of its workers. However, should William Jennings Bryan be elected president, this plant will shut down.
Who are you going to vote for, Eddie?
Have I got any choice?
No, I guess you haven't.
I'm going to vote for William Jennings Bryan.
You were a machinist, all right. Independent. It wasn't that you were conceited about yourself, but you were a man of skill. You were a craftsman with the self-respect and the self-reliance that belongs with craftsmanship. No one could order you around. No one except Maggie Wilson.
The horse stopped.
That's right, he did, didn't he? Must be tired.
You might as well make him go. There'll be no smooching.
Oh, Maggie, just one kiss. One little one. About so big. Oh, come on.
No.
Okay, so big.
I'm not in the mood.
Maggie.
No, I said.
Don't you like me anymore?
You, Eddie? You're the man I'm going to marry.
Well, what is it, honey?
Eddie, it's about time somebody told you the facts of life.
Here I am, baby. Teach me.
There's a little more to living than being a skilled mechanic.
For instance?
Not having to live with your in-laws, for instance. Furniture that isn't secondhand, for instance. Having a little money for...
I make 20 cents an hour. That's a pretty good wage.
Is it? Men doing the same work in St. Louis get 40 cents an hour, and they don't have to work 10 hours a day either.
Get up.
Oh, now you're angry with me for being bossy.
No. Who told you about St. Louis?
A friend of Dad's. Eddie, don't be angry. Eddie, please, let's be friends.
You brooded about what she told you. When you got a chance, you asked old man McDaniels about it.
McDaniels, what's so different about this town and St. Louis?
Machinists in St. Louis got themselves a union.
Well, that was simple, wasn't it? You'd form a branch of the union.
Eddie, it ain't that I'm scared, mind you, but, well, Mr. Vesey don't approve.
Maybe that's why you did it. It was the machinist in you coming out in stubbornness.
There are a few guys here crawling to cut the foreman's grass. Watch out for stooges and stool pigeons.
You didn't have to watch out for anything. It was a free country, wasn't it? And you did your work, didn't you? Still, you weren't surprised when the boss sent for you.
Young man, from what they tell me, you're no shoemaker. If you keep it up, you can be a crackerjack machinist. In the machine shop, there's no higher praise.
Mr. Vesey, I...
Any Monday, Eddie, there'll be an extra cent an hour in your pay envelope. What do you think of that, huh?
Thanks for the penny.
I must say you don't sound very grateful.
Well, I was going to ask for an increase of a nickel as a start.
Hmm. You put a pretty high value on yourself, young fellow.
Well, shouldn't I, Mr. Vesey? You did.
Young fellow, you ought to be a little bit more respectful.
Mr. Veazey, 5 cents an hour sounds a lot more respectful than a penny an hour.
Yeah, you're no fool, are you?
No, sir.
Tell me, Eddie, if you're not a fool, why did you go and join the union? Answer that.
When I joined, they warned me there were stool pigeons around.
Stool pigeon is a harsh word. Myself, I prefer the term loyal worker. And suppose right here and now we make it absolutely plain that I won't have anybody in this shop who belongs to the union.
Mr. Veazey, you belong to an association of employees.
For my protection, young fellow.
Yes, sir. And I've joined an association of workers for my protection.
I repeat, this company will not employ any machinist who joins the union.
I joined the union, sir.
I like a young fellow with spunk. You're all right. And on your way out, stop by at the cashier's window. You're fired.
The Education of Eddie Jones. If you had taken the trouble to read it, you could have found it in the code of the association. Quote,
"It is the privilege of the employee to leave our employ whenever he sees fit. And it is the privilege of the employer to discharge any workman when he sees fit."
Unquote. The association called it a statement on freedom of employment, but Maggie found other words.
Eddie Jones, machinist first class, citizen second class. Oh, cheer up, Eddie. There are plenty of other jobs. Look, here's an ad in the newspaper. All around journeymen to install, erect, and maintain printing presses.
And so, very early the next morning, you applied for the job.
Are you industrious, young fella?
No, sir, I'm lazy.
What's that?
Don't ever hire an industrious machinist, sir. Hire a lazy one. They're the best kind.
Well, that's a novel point of view.
I don't think so.
Don't you, young fella?
No, it's as old as the first man who was too lazy to keep rubbing a couple of sticks together every time he wanted to build a fire. He was so lazy, he invented a match.
You got something, young fella.
The way I see it, sir, you can put down most of the human progress to a kind of laziness.
You know, I never thought of it that way.
I know it sounds like a joke, but it's true. The best machinists are always trying to improve the machine, to think of something better. I guess I try to be like them.
I believe you, young fella. What did you say your name was?
Jones.
Well, Jones, I like you. I think I'd like to have you work for me.
I can begin right now.
Well, that suits me fine. Now, you can report to Mr. Olney and... By the way, Jones, what did you say your first name was?
I guess I didn't say. It's Eddie.
Just a second, please. Edward S. Jones?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry?
That's right. I'm afraid we can't use you.
You didn't tell Maggie that your name had been placed on a blacklist. You had to make sure...
Sorry, nothing here for you.
All right. If they wouldn't hire Eddie Jones, maybe they'd hire a journeyman who gave a name like,
My name is Wilson, Fred Wilson.
Just a moment.
He was studying a card index. Now, for the first time, you understood what the blacklist meant. They had circulated your photograph in a complete description.
It's a shame. I've been looking for a man to overhaul Corliss engine. My hunch is you're the man. But I can't take a chance on hiring you. No, siree. I couldn't take the chance.
Well, it's your business, isn't it?
Maybe so, but if I hire a union member, I can be expelled from the Employers Association. Maybe it's different in other industries, but here in the metal trade... Well, sorry.
Nice to have met you.
Young man, try to understand my position.
That's funny.
Is it? If I'm kicked out of the association, other companies won't sell me raw materials... or buy my finished product. Young man, it's the blacklist for you. I don't want it to be the boycott for me. You look like a decent sort. You take my advice. Why don't you try some other city?
And suddenly, it came over you almost with the sharpness of pain... that skill was not enough, and training wasn't enough, and experience wasn't enough. Suddenly you saw it clearly. You saw how exposed you were, and not you alone. Old man McDaniel was exposed by age, and the new apprentice sweeping the floor was exposed by youth, and the journeyman building the steam turbine was exposed because he was separated from the journeyman, keeping it in repair. The answer was so simple. In your pocket, in the little card on which was printed, International Association of Machinists. That night, you sat on the steps of Maggie's house and you tried to put it into words.
Maggie, you know something I've been thinking?
Uh-oh, that's bad.
All we've got is our hands. Nothing else. And yet they're afraid of us. They're afraid of me.
That's why they fired you. Because they're so afraid of you.
Sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Well, it is crazy, isn't it?
No, you're wrong. They're so frightened, they've joined together to keep us separated and apart.
I'd say they're doing a good job of it. We're separated and apart, you and me.
Why are we apart? Because we haven't got a strong union, that's why.
Like you and me.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Maggie, I'm serious.
Eddie Jones, what makes you think I'm joking? We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility.
Look, Maggie.
And you keep your hands to yourself, Eddie Jones.
Not this time. I'm saying goodbye.
Eddie.
I'm leaving town tonight.
You're a grown man. I suppose you know what you're doing.
There's no work for me here. It makes sense to try another town.
You could go back to Mr. Veazey. He'd take you back if you said you were sorry.
You want me to do that?
No, Eddie.
It's what you just said.
When you feel yourself falling, you grab out at anything. Oh, don't pay any attention to me, Eddie. Where will you go?
Cleveland, Chicago, St. Louis, wherever the train goes.
You haven't even got money for train fare.
Oh, I'll be traveling in style. I'll have an empty boxcar all to myself.
Eddie.
Yeah?
You'll be coming back, won't you?
No.
Oh.
But I'll send for you.
Oh.
Don't worry, kid. There'll be a union yet.
You walked with her down to the railroad yard, and you said goodbye. In your pocket, a union card. In your hands, the knowledge of your trade. In your heart, a sense of purpose. This was all the baggage you carried when you got out of town.
You've been listening to the original 1950 radio show, Boomer Jones, produced by the Machinists Union. Let's check back in with labor historian Charlie McAuliffe. So what do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, this has revealed some very interesting things that a lot of our current workers in society and our members may not realize. For a young person to enter into a trade and to learn a trade, as what happens with Eddie here, is really the high point in a young worker's life, to learn a trade, especially back then. And the machinist trade, because of the railroad industry, because printing industry, because the Industrial Revolution, a machinist trade was very highly prized. Everybody needed machinists for all aspects of industrial production. So him getting into a machinist program and doing well in it is very inspiring for a young person. And it takes somebody who's pretty bright to be able to do that, too, because that was a new technology in that time period. So he encounters what a lot of people encounter during that time period. When you want to improve your standard of living, he wanted to get married, you know. He wanted to save some money, wanted to earn money, enough money to be able to get married. And his employer said no. And when his employer found out that he was toying with the idea of actually joining the machinist union, the employer let him go. And we see that happening quite regularly in that time period.
So that was pretty typical.
Yeah, sure. Sure, yeah. And typical, and two, that the employer belonged to an association himself. And as we heard, he becomes blacklisted. And his whole notion of him being a machinist in that city during that time period his name was circulated amongst other employers in that association so that they wouldn't hire him because he was a danger. He wanted to unionize.
Now, he had been working 10-hour days, 6 days a week. Was that typical as well?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was the Machinists Union, where we have the name Fighting Machinists. That came to us for the fight for the 9-hour day. That's what other unions used to refer to the machinist because we led the fight for the 9-hour day during that time period.
Now, we hear the term stool pigeon. What does that mean, literally?
That means giving up somebody, telling the employer that, hey, you know Eddie there, he's a card-carrying union member. Be careful, you know. And to find favor with the employer, stool pigeons were people that give other people up, you know, tell on them.
Now, this sounds like it was at-will work. You know, they referred to, you know, freedom of employment. But, you know, this is really hard for people to improve their lives if they know that they could be fired at any time for any reason. What is the pressure with that when you're trying to have a good living?
Yeah, well, you know, we still see some of that today when people use their voice in their workplace. And if they're not organized, you know, if your voice, what you're saying irritates the employer, you're going to get fired unless you're unionized or unless the employer is violating some other law. But at will employees, especially back then without any protection, little to no labor legislation at all. It was, you know, it was a heavy hammer that the employer had.
You know, we hear Eddie saying that he wants to go to another city at the end of the first half that we just heard. And that seems like a lot to me to just pick up and leave. And you could hear, you know, Maggie's disappointment and her worry in her voice. How hard was it back then to just leave everything behind?
Yeah, that's really hard. I mean, it's first of all the love interest. It's hard to leave him behind, but that's also a motivation for him to leave and try to better his life too, because they were counting on that for their future. So very difficult. We can associate that today with what we see immigrants. You know, the chances they take at trying to improve their lives and for their families. But it's still very hard, in particularly that era. There was no airline to call up and say, hey, can I get a ticket? You had to ride trains, and it was costly to ride a train. So, you know, a lot of folks would just grab an empty boxcar. Right.
Well, speaking of boxcars and trains, you know, we're so proud that the Machinist Union was founded as a railroad union in 1888. Now, let's listen to the second half of the 1950 show, Boomer Jones. In a few minutes, you'll hear Eddie Jones called Boomer for the first time.
You sit in an empty boxcar in a freight train traveling from one American place to another, and a loneliness comes over you. You listen to the sound of the rail. You hear the whistle of the engine, and the emptiness of the boxcar seems suddenly vast and terrifying. It grows worse when the train stops at a siding near some village. You force open the door, and in the darkness you can see a light in a house where people live and are together. And suddenly there's nothing you want more than the sound of a human voice.
All right, bum.
The voice is human enough, but not especially friendly. It's the brakeman.
Come on, hobo, hustle off.
I'm not a hobo.
Sure, and I'm the president of the railroad. I do this for a hobby. Go on, beat it.
I'm looking for a job.
Yeah. Hold your face up to the lantern. Hey, what are you riding on?
My nerve, I guess. And this union card.
Huh? Machinist union. Oh, why didn't you say so? I'm a member of one of the railroad brotherhoods. Now, fella, you sit tight. I'll bring you some coffee. Don't go away, brother.
Suppose he did say brother. It's just a word, isn't it? Just a couple of union people meeting one another somewhere in the United States of America in the year 1909. So what? You're not a kid anymore. You blow your nose and you wonder a little at yourself. In the next weeks in machinist lodges across many states, the wonder in you increases.
Are you broke, brother? I guess I am. Or you can go to any machinist lodge in the USA and show that union card. It's always good for a couple of bucks. Say, come on home. We've got a bed that isn't doing anything. Things are quiet here. Try one of the railroad machine shops in Kansas City. Thanks for the tip. Have you eaten? Ha ha, when? Let's go.
Ever build or repair locomotives?
No.
Think you'd like it?
I'd like it fine.
I guess we can fix you up with a job. But be careful. For every two machinists in this shop, there's one stool pigeon. Watch your step, Boomer.
Boomer, that's what he called you, and it was true. Out of the first railroad machine shops the Boomers had traveled, journeyman machinists going from town to town, spreading the gospel of trade unionism. And now, that's what you were. Eddie Jones, Boomer Jones.
That's him. That's the union missionary I told you about.
Should have known.
All right, you. Get your time. You're through.
You were a married man now, and you had responsibilities, and so you promised Maggie that next time you'd try to be more careful. Only the next time you were handled by company police.
All right, you. Maybe this will teach you. Oh! Oh! Oh!
And the time after, that the goons of the infamous Railroad Audit Bureau caught you outside your house.
There he goes. Here you are, Eddie Jones. Oh! No! No!
It was an eventful career. They broke your nose up in Canada in 1911. They caved in two of your ribs in San Francisco in 1912. But the union was growing. From 23,000 to 43,000 to 61,000 to 75,000. Yes, the machinist union was growing. It was 1915 now, and by this time it looked like the automobile was here to stay, and so, for 6 months, mostly out of curiosity, you worked as an auto mechanic. Every time you changed jobs now, Maggie was giving you a queer look. But this time, it was Maggie herself who brought the letter in.
I suppose you opened it.
I suppose I have.
Maggie, why do you do things like that?
Woman's curiosity, I guess.
Well, if you can open my pay envelope, I guess you can open my mail. Who's it from?
Machinist, Grand Lodge, Washington, D.C. Dear sir and brother, I know you'll be very happy to hear that a majority of the machinists at the VZ Company have joined the union. It occurred to us that you and the wife might enjoy a visit to the old neighbors, and while you're about it, you might help in negotiations with Mr. VZ for a union contract. Mr. VZ has an idea that... Eddie, things have been pretty good around here.
Okay, Maggie, I'll wire the Grand Lodge to send somebody else.
Eddie, you know it'll only turn into a scrap.
Well, I won't go, Maggie. I just told you I'll send a wire.
Because there's bound to be trouble. You know it. Ticket line, day and night, never knowing where you are, when you'll be home, worrying.
In God's name, who are you arguing with? I said I'm not going.
Well, you can't blame me for trying. You get out the suitcases. I'll pack our things.
are you doing here?
Mr. Veazey, the union has asked me to talk to you about a union contract here.
The union's gone out of its mind. Now get out.
Eddie represents us, Mr. Veazey. Don't you think you ought to listen to him?
I have nothing to say to him, McDaniels, nor to you.
Your machinists are entitled to a raise.
Get out of here.
And in addition, Mr. Veazey, they're entitled to an 8-hour day.
Get out of here.
Plus union security.
You heard what I said. Get out of here.
I heard you, Mr. Veazey. Did you hear what I said?
I give you 30 seconds to leave these premises.
Come on, Eddie, let's go. You can shut off the power, Mr. Veazey. We took the vote this morning. Your machinists are on strike.
The only good strike is a strike that is ended. You know this. But you also know that sometimes only through a strike can you preserve your dignity as a human being. Yes, higher wages are important. Yes, reduced hours are important. But to be treated with civility and respect, that's something even more important. You know that. And for that, you go on strike. During the first week of the strike, Mr. Deasy makes a public announcement.
Unless the strikers return immediately to work, the company will be obliged to suspend operations in this city and remove all its equipment to our plant in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Eddie, what are we going to do?
I knew this was wrong.
You got to send her there.
Take it easy, boys. Settle down.
How about it, Eddie?
I've got a telegram in my pocket from the Grand Lodge. Shall I read it?
Sure.
Well, listen carefully, then. You'll find it interesting. Yesterday at 2 o'clock, machinists of the Pennsylvania branch of the Beezy Company went on strike.
Good for
them! Listen, listen. This morning, we received a telegram threatening that if we didn't go back to work, operations would be closed down here and equipment transferred to your city. We're betting Beezy tried to pull the same old stall on you. Do we win our bet? Now, with your permission, I'd like to wire the following reply. Quote, you win your bet, and we're both going to win this strike. Shall I send it?
Yeah!
You sent the wire, and for another week, and a second week, and a month, you walked the picket line.
Eddie, he's bringing in strike breakers.
But a strike breaker is not a machinist. He's only a strike breaker. He comes to the job with neither skill nor self-respect, only with greed. And greed cannot operate a lathe, or repair a locomotive, or service a car, or assemble an airplane. This, too, is a fact of industrial life, an expensive fact, which takes a little time for learning. Mr. Veazey serves his time, and then he calls you.
I'm ready to grant an 8-hour day and a wage increase of 8 cents an hour.
And union recognition, Mr. Veazey.
You and McDaniel's got the other things. Leave union recognition alone.
Union recognition comes first. You can't build a house without a foundation. Union recognition, Mr. Deacon.
I'll leave that for next year or the year after. The trouble with you union fellas is that you want everything in a hurry. I'll take it from someone older. You've got to take a broader view. You have to see things in the long run.
McDaniels gets his wages in the short run, Mr. Veazey. His wife feeds his family in the short run. He enjoys an extra hour of leisure in the short run. Mr. Veazey, we laugh in the short run. A finger bleeds in the short run. We rejoice and sorrow and live our lives in the short run. And in the long run, we all die. We'll take union recognition now.
Pity, tell me, do the other negotiators for the machinist union talk like you?
Some talk a good deal better, Mr. Veazey.
I wouldn't be surprised. All right, boys, put it in the contract. Union recognition.
A story of the building of a democratic American institution, the International Association of Machinists. No, not the whole story, not even a part of the story, yet Eddie Jones, Boomer Jones, stands as a symbol of the skilled and devoted men and women, the craftsmen who have built industrial America. And to those who have newly come, Eddie Jones has a word to say.
When you get your first pay envelope, open it up and look inside. What do you see? Look hard. You see it? There's the extra nickel an hour that cost me two broken ribs in 1912. There's the 4 cents McDaniels won for you by staying on the picket line in that winter of 1915. All the sacrifices, all the fighting and the courage and all the intelligence and the devotion of all the pioneers who've gone on before. All in your pay envelope. The late hours, the meetings, the negotiations, our wives waiting by themselves. All the things we gave up. It's right there. That's how we built the union. For you.
What kind of a union?
The IAM has more collective bargaining agreements with more employers than any other union in the world.
The IAM is one of the largest of the railroad unions.
Largest union in the aircraft industry. Largest union of auto mechanics.
Largest union in the machine tool industry.
Largest union in the business machine industry.
One of the largest unions of government employees.
600,000 of the most skilled workers in the United States and Canada. From their hands have come the atomic energy project at Oak Ridge and Hanford. From their skills, TVA and hydroelectric power. From their craftsmanship, jet propulsion, supersonic aircraft, our tanks, our submarines, our great carriers. These are the men and women. From them, the locomotive, the steamship, the automobile, the printing press, the engines of our democracy. And on this day, they remind us that behind every machine there stands a man. Behind every jig and fixture and pattern, there stands a human being. It's something important to know, and something you should not forget.
Thank you, William Holden, Marie McDonald, and Brian Dunleavy, and the other members of our cast for a stirring performance. And now I present the president of the International Association of Machinists, Al Hayes.
I am speaking for the thousands of men and women of the Machinists Union who make and maintain the machines upon which our industrial society is based. For the hundreds of thousands who work at those machines to produce the materials of our living and the defense of our country. On their behalf, I want to add just this much to the story of Eddie Jones, who was one of us. Our union has been able to accomplish a great deal for its members because it is respected everywhere as an honest, democratic organization. Our organization is open to every American or Canadian employed in manufacturing, installing, repairing, or operating machinery. Ours is not a closed union. Its policies are controlled by the votes of the membership in secret ballot referendum. Membership in the Machinist Union means more than higher wages and shorter hours. Membership in our union means dignity for our labor, respect for our skills, and justice on the job. Beyond that, it embraces the good and welfare of every living American. As a matter of history, the labor movement has led every fight to better the lot of the plain people, from free public schools and the right to vote of 100 years ago to workmen's compensation and the old age pensions of our time. In large part, the heritage of America is a proud accomplishment of working people. On behalf of every man and woman in our union, I pledge that our fight for these things will continue. Until the promise of America is fulfilled, until freedom and justice are in truth the birthright of all men.
You have just heard a special program presented as a public service by the International Association of Machinists. Brian Dunleavy was the narrator. William Holden was featured as Eddie Jones and Marie McDonald as Maggie. The part of McDaniels was taken by James Bell, Mr. Veazey by Harold Vermilia. Others in the cast were Jeff Corey, Barney Phillips, Tom Powers, Earl Ross, Michael Ross, and Herb Weigman. Your announcer is Hi Averback.
This transcribed program produced by MS Novick was presented by the International Association of Machinists.
Just a moment ago, you heard from former International President Al Hayes. I'm the current Machinist Union International President, Bob Martinez. A lot has changed since 1950. Some for the better, some not. But the important thing is that we continue to fight for the rights of workers on shop floors, in railroad yards, above and below the wings of our airplanes, and anywhere else we represent members of our great union across the United States and Canada. 2020 has brought huge challenges. We continue to face discrimination on the job, but we fight back. We continue to see safety violations, but we fight back. Laws change to work against us, but we fight back. We have a chance to make our voices heard once again in November's general election. Our members have endorsed Joe Biden for president of the United States because he fights for workers' rights. Don't forget to vote November the 3rd. Remember, we have to vote for the candidates who vote in the best interest of workers. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay in this fight, brothers and sisters.
That was Machinist Union International President Bob Martinez. Labor historian Charlie McAuliffe joins me once again for some final comments. That was quite a show, Charlie. I especially liked when, you know, he gets out of the car, the box car, and he meets someone for the first time who calls him a bum and a hobo. But he has this wonderful reaction when he sees his union card. Tell us about that, that brotherhood.
Yeah, that was very important because the person checking on the boxcars is referring to the railroad brotherhoods. The machinist was one of the unions in the railroad industry. And so the workers in the railroad industry were often abused by very powerful employers. A lot of murders and violence and beating workers up had existed. So the railroad brotherhoods, the railroad unions, were very protective of one another and helped one another whenever they could.
Now, you mentioned that violence and how Eddie Jones was beat up. He said he had broken ribs and he was attacked by company police and an audit bureau. I mean, I'm glad that's not happening today, at least from what I've seen. But it did seem typical back then.
Yes, but employers today, not as much violence as what went on back then. But it isn't all that long ago that the employers still hired private police departments, Pinkertons and detective agencies. They were still doing that in my career. And they would also use the police departments to help them because politically they were tied to police departments wherever they were at. So, no, different kind of violence, but it's... there's still legal violence today against workers of all kinds.
We heard Eddie Jones go through negotiations, and they made it through a strike successfully. How important is that, that workers stand together in solidarity when they strike?
In those days and today, that you do not have any voice unless you belong to a union where you can collectively protect one another. And in that sequence, we hear the employer say, well, I'm just going to close up and move it to my other shops in another city. Well, Eddie pointed out he got a letter from the International saying he was saying the same thing in that shop because they were on strike. So the unity, not only in the one workplace, but a number of workplaces makes a difference. In the Machinist Union long ago, we created a coordinated collective bargaining to make sure that the employer was not whipsawing one workplace against the other. So a very important concept there that we hear.
The time period of the show is 1904 to 1915. How much was the Machinist Union growing during that time?
Oh, gosh. In 1911, we were approximately 56,000 workers, members. By 19, 2019, we were 330,000 members, the fastest growth of our union in history. And the reason is that the union redefined who was going to be a union member for the Machinists Union. That's when women were accepted as member, and the unskilled were accepted as member. A lot of controversy within the union, but the union moved forward and was able to enlarge the ranks of who was protected. Now, not by just how you worked, but where you worked. That was the difference.
Charlie, you mentioned some parallels, but what other parallels do you see between the 1950 show Boomer Jones and today, very briefly?
Yeah, briefly, it's just Hayes attempted to use the media to promote unionization. We saw that with other unions, minor circumstances of that. But today, we have to seek membership through a lot of different sources. Back then, the IM Journal was used a lot. You know, when a worker went from one place to the other, they would ask for more journals to take with them to share with the non-unionized members. So,
what are your hopes for unions?
Well, unions represent the voice of democracy in the workplace. I hope we grow and we get past this terrible time that we're in right now with a lot of members laid off because of the COVID thing. But the history of the union has always been when there's been shortage in labor markets, the union, it grows. So we need a full economy for our members and for the union to grow.
Thank you so much, Charlie McAuliffe, labor historian extraordinaire. And thank you for joining us for this look back at the Boomer Jones radio show, which the Machinist Union produced 70 years ago in 1950. We leave you now with an old song produced by the Machinists, which seems fitting this year. It's called Election Day.
When you reach the age of 21, there's a job for your country that should be done. You owe it to yourself and the USA to vote on Election Day. Study the issues so that you select a candidate honest and true. We need men to see the light who guard our freedom day and night. It's your way to show the world that we own a share and believe in democracy. You owe it to yourself and the USA to vote on Election Day.
That's it for this special Labor Day edition of Labor History Today. I hope you enjoyed Boomer Jones, the union radio show produced by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. It first aired back in 1950 and was re-aired last night on WCPT in Chicago. Very special thanks to the IAM for permission to rebroadcast the show here. As always, you can subscribe to LHT on your favorite podcast app. And even better, if you like what you hear, please like it in your podcast app and, of course, pass it along. Labor History Today is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network, working people's voices, broadcasting worldwide 24 hours a day. You can find out more at laborradionetwork.org, where there are links to nearly 70 labor radio and podcast shows. Labor History Today is produced by the Metro Washington Council's Union City Radio and the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. For Labor History Today, this has been Chris Garlock. On this Labor Day 2020, thanks so much for listening. Stay safe and healthy, but do keep making history, and see you next time.